weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the guys on Drive Time for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, January 28th, and you're listening to Game On with me, Shane Dawson, alongside Ruby Walsh.
Good evening, Shane. Coming up over the course of the next hour, Niall Moore and chats hurling after an entertaining opening weekend in the Allianz League. Mark Langdon brings us the latest European football news, and we'll hear from IRFU Performance Director David Humphreys.
We'll also be joined by Danny Mullins ahead of the Dublin Racing Festival and round up today's sports news headlines. You can get in touch via text on 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or join the conversation on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Check out the podcast on the RTE Radio Player app.
Well, Ruby, it is the last time I'm going to be speaking to you before the Dublin Racing Festival. Are you excited? Looking forward to it this weekend?
I am, Shane. Yeah, it'll be great racing. Look, as we said last night in the show, the fields did cut up a little bit this afternoon. A couple of defections when you had forfeits, but some brilliant horses still left in for the weekend. A lot of them are trained by Willie Mullins, and he's double and trebly handed. But you will get to see the likes of Gallop and Champ take on Factifile again in the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup on Saturday afternoon. You look to have a pretty competitive Nathaniel Lacey and partner Solicitors and Offices Hurdle to open the card. The Juvenile Hurdle looks strong, so too does the Goff's Irish Arkle, where you'll have Majbra and Eel Atlantique. Champion Hurdle looks like having Lossy Mouth and Stateman. So look, plenty of good horses on show for the weekend, and some really competitive action.
Yeah, it should be an absolutely cracking weekend. Very much looking forward to chatting to Danny a little bit later. We do have some soccer news as well. I'm going to come back to racing news in a moment. I'm going to pick your brain on a story over in England at the moment, Ruby, but from Association Football, 33-year-old Welsh defender Adam Matthews has joined Shamrock Rovers ahead of the new League of Ireland season. Matthews has been playing in Cyprus for the last couple of seasons, but in the past won 14 international caps with Wales and was part of Celtic's 4 in a row of Scottish League winning side between 2011 and 2015. Manager Stephen Bradley is also exploring any option the club may have on landing Johnny Kenny on a second potential loan deal from Celtic until the summer. And this is perhaps one for Mark Langdon a little bit later, Ruby. After weeks of speculation, finally we have a development in a potential loan move for Irish international Evan Ferguson. Graham Potter and West Ham have made inquiries today regarding a deal for teenage attacker. Brighton are not expected to have any objections about sending the midman out for some much needed game time this season. However, there's also rumoured interest in Bundesliga side Bayer Leverkusen, managed of course by Xavi Alonso. So I think the Athletic also have a story that we might be even moving on a permanent deal. They're open to a permanent move. So hopefully,
yeah, and I read somewhere else this morning or earlier this afternoon even that Bournemouth, Arsenal and Everton hadn't given up on Evan Ferguson yet. And of course Liverpool have named their squad for tomorrow night's Champions League game.
They have indeed. Good news for
goalkeeper.
Yes, great news for Creevan Kelleher, who we expect will start because no Alisson Becker in the squad for that one. So Creevan is there with Vichari Yarosh, who would be familiar to League of Ireland fans having played for Pats in the not too distant past. But hopefully Creevan gets some game time in the Champions League tomorrow. Another Irish youngster on the move, a Sligo Rovers teenager Aidan Gabadon, the 16-year-old centre half, has joined Swedish top flight side Malmö, having impressed during a trial last summer. Manager John Russell has Gabadon on the bench for 3 league games last season. Whilst no transfers fee is involved for Sligo, there will be a compensation deal for that one. Now, I did say I wanted to pick your brain on something, Ruby. As I do, I'm going to make it a habit of every show that we're on together, I'm just going to pick your brain.
I actually have a crossover between soccer and racing that might interest you before you get there.
Oh yeah, I'm having it, yeah.
Yeah, big blow for Harry Redknapp today. Horsey owns in the UK, the Jukebox Man, very good novice chaser, won at Newbury first time up and won the Cotto Star novice chase at Kempton at Christmas, looked a real live contender for the Cheltenham Festival, has been ruled out for the season, so that's a blow for Harry Redknapp and his trainer Ben Pauling.
Okay, oh, that is majorly a blow, and that is racing across the water, Ruby.
It is, he'd be an English runner, but anyway, it was a blow for Harry Redknapp, he won't be.
Yeah. No, that is. No, you ruined my segue there. I was going to say that's across the water. And then I was like, speaking of which, Ruby, trainers will make themselves available for television interviews at Sandown on Saturday after a proposed boycott was called off. Now, I'm sure this is a much broader story that we could take about a whole week, never mind a whole show, to kind of really get into. But there was a potential boycott that could have long-lasting ramifications for media rights? Who knows? It could spill over here, or am I blowing it, or am I making it too much of a big deal out of this?
Making it too big, and probably, I suppose, any story can get lost in the headline. But that was, it was a power struggle, Shane. It was, and what the trainers, or no, what the members of the PRA Association in the UK had threatened to do was to boycott giving television interviews from the trainers at the weekend. Now, they only represented a portion of the trainers in the UK, because the National Trainers Federation is actually the bigger body. Mm. But their idea was to, they would stop giving media rights interviews because there are up in arms over media rights payments. Now, jockeys do, not the jockeys, the Jockeys Association do receive payments for media work that they do, which goes into career-ending insurance for jockeys. But that's because of, for all media obligations. Trainers don't get it, and they were saying, well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Mm. But actually, it goes back to a much bigger row, and that is over media rights payments. Now, that isn't necessarily, even though it sounds meaty, you think, well, that's the television money. It's not. The media rights payments in horse racing is actually the value of the live pictures. But the biggest payer are for live betting shops and for streaming services online. They pay 80% of those payments. So the race courses, many years ago, when media rights payments became a thing, claimed 100% ownership of them. And therefore, they claimed ownership of the product. And now that's being challenged by the trainers, as it should be, by challenged by all stakeholders within the game, trainers, owners, jockeys, everybody. Mm. Because who owns the product? Well, I'm not sure that's ever been defined. But yet the racecourses get all the money for the product. So what the trainers are trying to do in England was challenge that. They went about it by proposing that they would boycott television interviews. But they need to do something much bigger.
Not strong enough.
No, not even when they were divided with two associations, like two unions don't ever win a battle. And when you have two unions fighting, it generally means that the person in charge just stands back and let the two unions have the row between themselves and nowhere goes anything. So it's not a great theory. But look, I do definitely have a point, but it's a much broader picture. And I'd say they need to paint, and I haven't time to paint the whole picture here, but the whole picture needs to be painted, because by standing back from media rights payments or from television interviews because they weren't getting paid kind of made them look greedy, but it wasn't really what they were intending to do. So it was a PR disaster for them from the word go. But they do have a point. They just need to make it in a much better way.
Okay, well, that is actually very
much
well explained.
Bigger story. There's an hour in it, Shane.
It's an intriguing
the ins and outs of it. And even for the jockeys, it goes back to, it was the late 80s and the jockeys realised what was coming. Long before my time, and there was two very prominent flat jockeys sat in the Wareham in Chester. One was saying, we're not going out to ride till we get a slice of this pie. And then the other one, two dominant people, the other one said, well, I'm riding. And that was the end of it. No one got a cut. But that's just what it goes back to. It all goes back to money. Everything, Shane, goes back
this
to money.
This is true. It's how the world works, Ruby. News just in as well, actually. Good news for Arsenal fans. Arsenal's appeal against the red card for Miles Lewis-Skelly receiving the Premier League match at Wolves has been successfully overturned, and he will not have to serve a three-game suspension. The English FA have announced and confirmed. So good news for Arsenal fans in that regard.
Game on.
Rugby.
For rugby news, Sam Prendergast has been declared fit and available for selection for Ireland's Six Nations opener with England on Saturday. The out-half suffered a dead leg during the team's training camp in Portugal this week, but trained fully this afternoon. England, meanwhile, have united the Curry twins, Ben and Tom, in their back row for Saturday's fixture, with the pair flanking number 8, Ben Earl. There's a debut for Caden Murley on the left wing, and Steve Borthwick has opted for a 6-2 split on the bench. The game will be live on RTE Radio 1 on an extended Saturday Sport. And we can hear from IRFU Performance Director David Humphreys, who sat down at their training camp in Portugal with RTE Sports, Neil Tracy.
David Humphreys, just under a year since you've been in the door of the IRFU HQ. How have you found the role so far?
Really enjoyed it. Having been away for 10 years from the Irish system, you probably lose a little bit of context to some of the decisions. So it's been great to get back and connect with a lot of people who've been in the system and understand how the whole provincial national teams have evolved. And that's been a real challenge, and been a real privilege to be part of a South Africa tour, which was very, very memorable for the second test. Get to see an Olympics up close and see the Olympic preparation. And now we're getting ready for what is back into the Six Nations. So it's all been a bit of a whirlwind, but really exciting, really interesting, and really enjoyed it.
What have been the elements that you probably weren't expecting, that you've maybe enjoyed, that you didn't really think were part of the brief?
I think that it's this the scope of the role. So having really only ever worked in clubs before, and in the cricket world where you were looking after a small number of teams, it's we have 23 teams who are looked after by the IRFU, and that doesn't include the provinces. So there's just so much going on in the Irish system at any one stage that it makes you think about things differently. It challenges you. But the good thing is we've got some fantastic, we've a lot of very, very good staff who have been responsible for bringing a huge amount of success to the Irish system over the last decade. And now it's about making sure that the decisions we make now, the changes that we have to make, some of the things that we want to tweak, that we're making good decisions to ensure that not only we continue the success, but actually build on what's been done before.
Looking at this Six Nations Championship coming up in the next week, there's obviously one very influential figure who's no longer in the coaching room for the next few months. How confident are you that Simon Easterby can just keep the ball rolling from what Andy Farrell's been doing over the last few years?
Any team would miss someone of the quality of Andy Farrell. He's the best rugby coach in the world. But Simon Easterby's been there for a long time, so I think it's business as usual. I think it's very much a case of Simon continuing to do what he's done as part of the Irish system. And look, I saw firsthand when we were away with the Emerging Ireland, seeing how he's run the programme this week. It'll be a seamless transition, and from a training and playing point of view, I don't see any difference at all.
In terms of the kind of short, medium, long-term priorities of your job, I would imagine one of them is trying to get Munster, Ulster, Connacht closer as possible to the level that Leinster are playing at the moment. How can you go about doing that without just taking away from what Leinster are doing?
Ireland's success has been based on the fact that all four provinces have been very, very competitive. They've all won something at different stages during the last 20 years. Longer term, we've got to make sure that Leinster continue to do what they've done, continue to produce world-class players, continue to compete at the end stages of all the competitions. But the challenge is for some of the other provinces, and almost that's the nature of professional sport. Success is never forever. But equally, the challenges that some of them are facing at the minute, they will move on. And it's about making some good decisions. It's about making sure that we invest in the right areas that allow those players the opportunities to perform, the opportunities to play. And if we get that right, I have no doubt that you will see those provinces producing more and more players who are able to play for Ireland.
Mm-hmm. On Munster specifically, the hunt is obviously still ongoing for the next permanent head coach. Are you confident with the internal timeline you have at the moment? It's obviously been going on since the end of October, but do you feel that over the coming weeks or months that you'll be in a position to confirm an appointment?
We would hope it'd be within a few weeks, but the whole thing in coaching and in appointments is never making a rushed decision. Mm-hmm. It's such an important appointment for Munster, both, not so much the rest of the season. They have a very, very good coaching team in place with Ian Costlow and Mike Prendergast, who have managed them through this last few months with support from Chris Boyd really, really, really well. So from our point of view, we have a confidence of the people that are in the room, but it's making sure that the process that we now go through ensures that we're giving Munster the best chance with the coaching appointment to allow them to be successful and competitive, continue to be competitive.
One of the things you said in the summer, it was one of the bigger points you made, was around how you wouldn't be allowing the provinces bring in non-Irish qualified front rows, because it's an area of the pitch you want to be developing internally. Obviously, Munster did bring in Deanne Bueller, who had an excellent short-term stay. So I suppose with that in mind, there obviously is an element of flexibility in the rule you have if things get bad enough in terms of injuries and unavailabilities.
The nature of high performance is there has to be flexibility, there has to be the ability for all our provinces to make decisions to ensure that they remain competitive. So as you said, we still all understand that front row and the depth in our front row isn't necessarily where we'd like it. The challenge is for all the provinces to continue to work hard to produce quality front row players. And we've seen that even in the last 6 months, we've seen more players come through. But as you said there, that the flexibility is that when Munster were facing an injury crisis, we were able to bring in someone from the outside who made a difference, allowed them to retain their competitiveness. And that will always have to be the case. To sit here and say the rule is black and white, no, it's not. But there is a principle, because we have to protect the national team. We have to ensure that Andy Farrell and Simon Easterby have the right level of players across every position that allow Ireland to maintain its status in top four.
And just finally then, it's obviously a huge year for women's rugby in Ireland, not just with the Six Nations later on in the spring, but the World Cup coming up. How important is it for Irish rugby as a whole to take advantage of what is such a big year?
We've said for a long time now that the growth of women's rugby, the support for women's rugby, getting Irish women's rugby to the same level as Irish men's rugby is one of our big aspirations. You'll have seen the strategic plan. One of the core pillars is the accelerating the women's game. And over the next few months, going into the Six Nations, I have no doubt we'll see that the performance that were there in WXV1 in Canada, we will build on that. And that's ultimately the best preparation we can have going into a World Cup year. But I think one of the things, again, you'll see, you talk about squad depth, you talk about the work that Scott Beaman with Jilly McDarby, developing the players now who are capable of playing, and not just playing, but competing against the best teams in women's rugby.
Can you give any clarity around Ireland, the Ireland men's team's summer plans? Obviously, there's been talk about Georgia, Portugal have come into the mix. Romania was mentioned last year. Do you know who you're playing and where you will be playing them yet?
Yeah, the logistics behind it are still to be confirmed, but in the summer we'll be playing against Georgia and Portugal. It'll be a two-match tour. It's obviously very different to what standard tours, summer tours would have been, because so many of our players and Andy will be away with the Lions. So it's another opportunity for some of our younger players to get experience at the international level and time with our coaches.
I'm sure a lot of fans would be delighted to hear about Portugal as a potential venue, but we'll wait and see. David, thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks very much.
David Humphreys speaking to our own Neil Tracy there.
He's a good talker, isn't he?
He is.
He uses all the right words: process, flexibility, strategic plan, pillars, logistics.
So he's great
still to be confirmed. He knows all the right words to put in there, not to really give you an answer.
great LinkedIn man. Great LinkedIn man. Interviews well. It should be a handy Six Nations, Ruby, according to the Optistats supercomputer, because England, our opponents this weekend, they've only a 2% chance of winning the tournament, according to Opta. Ireland, 63%, France, 29%, Scotland, 5%, Italy, 0.5%, and Wales, 0.2%.
What sort of a data man are you?
You should know me by now that I'm one for inane, rambling stats.
But you might call them out, like, but what do you actually believe? You can use data whichever way you want. I like to look at data and maybe for it to explain something to me rather than for me to take meaning from it. What about you?
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Opta using its data to simulate the tournament 10,000 times. I mean, you can simulate anything 10,000 times all you want. And yeah, it's similar. I'd have hesitations and reservations, I suppose, about AI and trying to simulate and predict everything. When you look at Ireland, are they taking into account that it's Simon Easterby as a head coach? Are they taking into account how it will play out?
I would imagine the person feeding the data in has fed in the fact that it's Simon Easterby in charge and that Andy Farr, which, according to won't make any difference.
But more of that, of how will that play out? Like, you can't just do stats about how Simon Easterby is a head coach. There's nothing to compare it on, basically. But would you then, as a human being rugby fan, be hopeful of Ireland's chances in this Six Nations campaign, Ruby?
I would worry about Ireland v France. I would be hopeful as a fan that they can beat England, but I would be very worried about the French challenge.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I was listening to Bernard Jackman on the show last week and I was agreeing with him. I felt like he was saying what I should have been saying.
Sounds better when it comes from Bernard, Ruby.
I thought the same too.
Well, you're going to be in your element after the break, Ruby, because Danny Mullins will be joining us as we look forward to the Dublin Racing Festival here on 2FM.
2FM.
Game on.
Racing.
Welcome back to Game On. So this weekend we'll see the 8th edition of the Dublin Racing Festival. 16 races, 8 grade 1s, 2 days all held in the capital city. And last year, day 1 was taken by storm when Danny Mullins rode a 535-1 treble in the opening 3 grade 1s aboard Dancing City, Cargeese, and he lets a tomp. Danny Mullins, can you do it again this year?
I don't know is the answer to that one. I will try. Who knows? I'd say a black swan event for the three of them to come last year, but we'll be up there giving it a shot.
Yeah, you will. You had a good day today in Limerick, St. Tar, one ride, one winner. It sets you up in good form anyway, Dan.
Yeah, it's nice to be going into the big meetings with confidence up and, you know, I'm riding well, the horses in the stable are going well, and fingers crossed we'll make it happen at the weekend.
So you rock in to Leopardstown 12 months ago, obviously riding the second strings of Willie Mullins, as maybe some of them could be the third strings, and Dancing City wins at 16-1, Cargeese wins at 7-2, and then Elite Tomp lands the Arkle at 6-1. I mean, it's kind of dreamland stuff, isn't it?
Ah, definitely. You know, you go into these big meetings, you know, Dublin Festival, Cheltenham Festival, and you're hoping to get one on the board. To come out with, you know, by the time I was 50 yards from the line and getting to the front on the third one, Illita Tom, last year, and I just started to smile and was thinking, is this a dream? Am I going to wake up? What a day.
What a day it was. And this year starts, obviously, with the very same race, the Nathaniel Lacey and Partners Solicitors Novices Hurdle. The favourite will be a horse called Final Demand, who you rode at Limerick at Christmas, I'm sure, or not sure, but I would imagine Paul Townend might take over on him this year. How good a horse is he?
I thought it was very good. You know, maybe there wasn't that much strength and depth to the race, but how he went about it, his jumping was fantastic. And for a horse having his first run, he quickened so well off the bend to put the race to bed. You know, it was a very good performance. I think he has all the earmarks of a grade one horse, and he's going to put it to the test now on Saturday.
He most certainly will. The second is the Gannon City Recovering and Recycling, a new sponsor for Leopardstown Services Juvenile Hurdle. You rode as Willie the Hool at Christmas, who was disappointing. Head On Neighbour won that race. Did he impress you, Danny?
I thought it was a good performance. He had the battle hard to hold on, but, you know, Keith was even saying, pulling up, that they got sucked into that battle earlier, so he might be better than the bare form of the victory. Now, he's going to have to do it, is to take on Lady Vega Allen again, and another one of Willie Mullins' St. Lucie, who was very impressive in Punchestown as well.
That was a much weaker race, St. Lucie. How would you compare her to those juveniles that ran at Christmas?
Yeah, on homework, you'd think, you know, she's right up there with them, but she has to go and prove it now. You know, again, similar to Final Demand, she was very impressive, but there wasn't strength and depth to the form, but she has the potential to go and do it. You know, she's favourite, Hello Neighbour is second favourite. To me, Hello Neighbour is the one who you would be siding with at the moment. He's proved that he can do it, and in a race that wasn't really run to suit him, so St. Lucie has to go and improve for me.
The third grade one on Saturday afternoon will be the Goff's Irish Arkle Novices Steeplechase, Firefox and Touch Me Not for Gordon Elliott versus Eat Atlantique and Mashborough for Willie Mullins. I'd be with Mashborough. What about you?
Yeah, he's looked very good in what he's done so far. You know, the first day he won in Fairy House, he was very impressive going around. And yeah, he didn't run in Nace before Christmas, and they've minded him for this day. But I think he took a lot of people's eye. He's only a young horse, but a horse with huge potential, where Il Atlantique is a little bit older, seems to have improved over fences. But, you know, Marshburg is the one that sparkles in your eye, I suppose.
When you watched Sergino and Kempton at Christmas, I thought he was incredible, actually. Could you see Mashborough or Il Atlantique getting to a level that could give him a race? More so Mashborough, I suppose.
I think Mashborough possibly could. I suppose the form from last year goes on a line through Cargeese, who was second to Mashborough and also second to Sergino in Aintree. And, you know, that matches them up quite well. Both horses, Mashborough and Sergino, have adapted to growing over fences very well, but I suppose Irish eyes will be smiling on Marshburg come March, and hopefully at the Dublin Festival he'll do it and, you know, back up the early performance.
With a bit of luck, he will. The Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup is, of course, the feature race on day one of the DRF, a rematch of Galloping the Champ and Factified from Christmas. There are 11 in the race, but to me it's pretty much a match. And is there any way Factified can turn it round with Galloping the Champ?
I don't think he can turn it around, but, you know, Galloping the Champ, he seems to be the king of Leopardstown at the moment. And Factifile had done plenty wrong in Leopardstown the last day when finishing second. You know, he was a bit keen, made a few mistakes at one or two of the downhill fences. And, you know, that match practice will definitely have him sharpened up come a Gold Cup in Cheltenham in March. And maybe he'll frighten Galloping a little bit more this time, but for me, it's Galloping's race to lose. He seems to be untouchable around Leopardstown.
Everybody has to do something different. So Factifile will have to do something different on Saturday in the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup. I have my thoughts, but I'll let you go first. If you were riding him, what would you do? No, neither of us will be. Mark Walsh will be riding him, of course. But if you were riding Factofile, what would you try and do?
I suppose you might try go a little bit more forward. You're hoping he's going to settle early in the race, but you know, maybe galloping the Champy can, if he bosses it his own way out in front, maybe taking him on a little bit more early. But you don't want to cut your own throat as well.
Yeah, I kind of see it the same way. I jump and go and see what happened. But that'll all be unfold on Saturday afternoon. Sunday, see some big matches. And Danny, I know the way things work in the William Mullins yard, you'll have no idea what you're riding on Saturday until Thursday and Friday until Sunday. But in the Ladbrokes Dublin Chase on Sunday afternoon, is there a chance JJ Slevin could be claimed for El Fabiolo and you might get yourself back on Solness?
Hopefully with JJ having a new retainer with the Simon Muneer Isaac Swade, there's a possibility. Would Solness be there? I'd love to ride him. I've won him. I've ridden him a few times. So a good winner at Christmas. And JJ gave him a very clever ride that day. So I don't know if I'd be able to pull one out of the bag like that, but you'd be definitely putting my name in the hat.
Putting your name in the hat. You're kind of saying that like this is a revelation to you that this could actually happen. Like, I know you well enough to know that you spotted this coming for about 3 weeks. Like, so I'm assuming your name isn't that.
I'm sure Ken Whelan has done all the work behind the scenes, and it could be one. But I suppose the interesting race on Sunday is the first race, the handicap hurdle, Paddy Mullins Mayor's Handicap. It's the only race no Mullins has won at the Dublin Festival, so that'll be one we'll all be trying to get our name on the board for.
I'm telling you, that would be a good one for you, of course, named after the Paddy. And your granny Maureen is on the title of it now as well, Danny, so you can't leave her out either. But what about the Irish Champion Hurdle? Stateman v Lossie Mouth. I know you're on the galloping team. I probably am as well. Where would you be going there?
It's a very tricky race. You know, Stateman was so far off his best the last day behind Brighter Days Ahead. But for me, he's the reigning champion hurdler. Lossiemouth, you know, maybe lacked a bit of spark behind Constitution Hill in Kempton. But for me, Constitution Hill didn't show his brilliant best at Kempton. And wasn't really that far clear when making a mistake the other day. So maybe I'd be swinging towards Stateman. He's definitely showing more spark at home.
You'll be swinging towards Stateman. That will be an interesting decision for Paul Townend to make on Friday morning. We've touched the Ladbrokes Chase. Do you think Gaelic Warrior could improve enough to get by Solness from Christmas?
You'd like to think so. You know, slower ground. He won in Arkell and Cheltenham last year on heavy ground. There's plenty of rain around at the moment. It'll definitely bring a lot more about from him at that trip. And I'd say overall the Willie Mullins horses maybe weren't firing at Christmas, and recent form, it's doubles, trebles and winners everywhere, so you'd expect them to be going there in a lot better nick, and hopefully plenty of them can hit the target.
With a bit of luck they will. Of course, Brighter Days Ahead does skip the Irish Champion Hurdle and go straight to the Cheltenham Festival. Romeo Coolio skips the Tattersalls Ireland Novice Hurdle, but Willie Mullins again has plenty in here. Danny K. Doughty, Carafon, Carnicay, Copake the board, all the K's. There's obviously a K here in France. Which one of them would you like most?
Oh, it's a hard race. Copec the boards was very good in Leopardstown at Christmas, but maybe didn't jump sharp enough. You know, he's favourite, but Cade Doughty on slow ground, I think he maybe wants a bit more distance, but on slow ground, I think he could be the one to take the beating on the day. You're looking at some of the other ones. Joystick was a good winner, but I'd imagine he'll go longer and trip. No, stick with Cade Doughty for the 2 mile novice hurdle.
Okay, Doughty, and the one race that Gordon Elliott does look like taking on Willie Mullins in is the Ladbrokes Novices Chase. Ballyburn, Champ Kylie and Impere Pass for Willie Mullins. Better Days Ahead, Croke Park and Search for Glory for Gordon Elliott. That could be a cracking contest, couldn't it?
It could be. You know, Ballyburn touched off by Sergino, who we were talking about earlier. He was touched off in Kempton. Steps up and trip to what is probably Ballyburn's best trip. But Champ Kylie, a bit of a forgotten horse. He was a grade one novice hurdler, was very good in his beginner's chase at Fairy House. I think he could give Ballyburn a fright if Ballyburn doesn't sharpen up his jumping more from Kempton. Made a bad mistake at the last, but seemed to have schooled well at home. It's going to be an interesting race.
Champ Kiley kind of sounds like one you're sticking your hand up for.
Well, having partnered him to Grade One already, I think I for one would be one that would like to get back on his back, and who knows what Willie will do.
With a bit of luck, you will, Dan. What would you consider a good weekend to be?
A good weekend to be trying to get one on the board. You know, this is a championship event. You know, so many Grade Ones. Try to get one on the board. You know, I've been lucky enough that the Dublin Festival has been very good for me in recent years, but it's always difficult. You can never go up there expecting something to happen. You're just doing all the homework and hopefully it comes together on the day.
To ride at it, is it one of the more special weekends?
Definitely. You know, like, there's so many English punters and race goers come over, which actually brings a lot more atmosphere to the track. They're there queuing at the gates 2 hours beforehand. And even when you're walking in, you feel that atmosphere. It's maybe different to all the other big Irish meetings, early atmosphere. It's building. It really hits a pinnacle heading out in those Grade Ones riding fancied horses.
I'm sure it's a thrill. Danny Mullins, thank you so much for taking our call, and the best of luck this weekend at the Dublin Racing Festival. Shane, I think we're back with hurling after this commercial break, are we?
We are indeed, but we may as well give the TV a bit of a plug. I'm sure you're on the box this weekend, Ruby.
I'm Dublin on Saturday, yeah.
Saturday from 1 p.m. on RT1 and the RT Player. Sunday from 1 p.m. on RT2. And the RTE Player with updates across Saturday and Sunday Sport on RTE Radio 1, as we will see. We will see, Ruby, if Galopin Deschamps can emulate Florida Pearl, perhaps. The great Florida Pearl with three consecutive
Florida Pearl ended up winning four, so he'll have to keep going a bit longer, Shane, to get to Florida Pearl's level if there he is.
Did. Won as a 12-year-old in 04. We're taking a short break. Hurling's next.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, Niall Moran is with us to chat hurling after the opening weekend of the Allianz League, with wins in the top division for Cork, Kilkenny and Tipperary, and elsewhere. Dublin had a big win in Croke Park against Antrim. Niall, it is great to chat. Hurling is back. The leagues are back. We have a new format, two up, two down. There's already some narratives developing even after week one. Are you a fan of the whole new format with a bit of extra jeopardy thrown in?
Much more competitive league, definitely, Shane, by all accounts. I'm sure, look, last weekend was a far cry from the weather we're going to be experiencing when it comes to the championship, but look, I'm sure managers, players and probably supporters, everyone's glad to kind of come out of hibernation. And look, we had a couple of very good contests. Clare and Kilkenny was a really, really exciting contest for a finish. Didn't lack for any bit of endeavour or effort from both teams. So Tip and Gall was probably a lot different, as kind of with 20 minutes to go, it was kind of over. But I think all in all, look, I'm sure a lot of the managers and players, they'll all be happy to get up and going, and a lot of learnings we had from the first round.
Up and going is right, and learnings, it's all about learning. But even with this new format, I mean, Galway, I kind of think Clare will be okay, but Galway are automatically on the back foot with Wexford.
Yeah, definitely a tricky start. I know the weather conditions were very, very poor in Galway right up until throwing on Sunday, and I know the game was delayed slightly. Look, I'm sure Micheál Donoghue, he had four new guys. The start has brought on a couple of extra guys that were new to it. I suppose if you took a glance at their team programme, like, there was no Dahi Burke, Gerard McInerney, David Burke, Joe Canning, all those names that would have been synonymous with the winning team in 17. So definitely Galway are a team very, very much in transition. And to be fair to the lads that played the last day, it's very hard to out in the first round of the league where everybody is trying to find their feet. Ordinarily, you'd love to be in a position where you'd have 10 or 11 guys with a good bit of experience and then pop in your three or four. But to be fair to a lot of Galway's debutants, they were really thrown into deep end. And some of them did do very well. I was very impressed by Oisín Nóthán at wing forward. Did very well. Look, I don't think anyone in Galway is going to be overly critical given the nature of the team to head out. But I suppose, look, with Kilkenny coming up next weekend, it probably does put you under a little bit of pressure to stay up. And so the key to the league, especially, is just survival for the following year. Because if you are operating in that lower tier, you are lacking the same quality games. But look, as we've seen before, I know in Limerick's case, they won the All-Ireland out of the lower division in 18. So all is not lost if you were to get relegated either.
All won't be lost, is right. But what about Tipperary? Did they unearth a few new stars to propel them forward and back into a competitive Munster Championship when the time comes round?
I'm sure. Look, everybody in Tipperary will be very pleased. 325 is a tremendous score. Galway is not an easy place to go to get a victory. Anecdotally, I think Tipperary have been training very hard. So maybe back a little bit earlier than other teams. And to be fair to Liam Cahill, like, he's probably in a no-win situation after Sunday, in that if you don't perform, then people are saying, Jesus, after all the training, you haven't done well. And Do you know what I mean? So, and if you do perform well, sure, you have all the work done, but he can only play what's in front of him. And I think in Dylan Walsh, one of his own clubmen, is a guy that I wouldn't have been overly familiar with. I thought he was a live wire throughout, finished up at 1-3. And Jake Morris really assumed a kind of leadership role for the forwards. Again, he got 3 points, but was very dangerous. And look, Ronan Maher is excellent at six. So I think for Liam Cahill, that's all you could have asked. He had 3 or 4 new guys blooded in. He got performances out of a number of them. And one thing I would say about Liam Cahill, he's an exceptionally honourable Tipperary man, very, very honest in his dealings with media, with players. And whether he sees this project out in 3 or 4 years to be a successful Tip team or not, I do think that he's doing what's right for the county. And I suppose, look, on the back of their minors winning in recent 21 success, it just takes a couple of years. And look, I have to admire how he's gone about his work. He's always been very, very honest. And look, players will always buy into that. But again, is this a clear barometer of what will come in championship? No, but in Liam's case, he's doing what he has to do at this time, and that's all you can expect out of any manager.
Similar to Galway, Clare were missing a few bodies, and I'm sure Brian Lone won't be too downbeat, and they're kind of holy grail with the eyes on the prize is the Munster Championship, I'm sure, and it is only week one of the league. However, for Kilkenny, I think it's over 10 years since they got a win down in Ennis. For your first day out to be going down and turning over the All-Ireland champions, like mentally, that must be a big thing for Kilkenny.
I'm sure with the personnel that they had on display versus what Clare had on, I think the Kilkenny DNA would dictate that it was a game that they should be winning. And they did win it, I suppose, after a slow start. I was at the game in Ennis. Amazing what a winter of hibernation would do if you do anything to get out of a Sunday. But I had missed the first 10 minutes and it was just sort of late coming in, and it was 9-2 to Clare. And I said, oh, Jesus, what's happening here? Because my expectation would have been that Kilkenny would have been stronger. But to be fair, in the second quarter of that game, like Michael Carey really took a hold of it. Even Fionnuala McAfee, the Kerry man, he was very, very strong from wing back in that second quarter. And they really kind of played themselves back into the game. And look, as coming down the home straight, I thought Clare, with the introduction of their two subs, Keith Smith and Paddy Donlan, they had 2 points apiece. I thought Clare were really going to edge it. But Kilkenny, look, the need was probably greater coming down the home stretch. And look, got a couple of good points there from Owen Cody, got one. Luke Hogan got one. And I suppose overall, even Massey Keown was superb in the second half as well. So, look, I think Kilkenny will be delighted. Look, like these things, they're looking for learnings, they're looking for new players. I suppose one name that wouldn't have rolled off the tongues was probably Peter McDonald from Thomastown. His midfield for Kilkenny, I thought he was very, very impressive throughout. So I suppose, look, for Kilkenny, they got probably a lot more shots away. They probably were overall probably the better side. So like, they would have taken a lot of positives and obviously the 2 points to go. But Brian Lohan, in the same vein, would have been delighted with a team with just 5 All-Ireland starters. A lot of guys really, really played well. So it's Jack O'Neill, bring back to me, caught my eye. Davy Conroy, who had been there previously, centre forward, did very well as well. So look, I know it's cliched, but a win-win on both situations. But given the players that Brian had out, he'll be delighted, albeit maybe a costly injury to David McInerney that he could have done without at this early stage. So again, so the key is nursing your older guys back in as the league goes on and avoiding injuries.
I was just going to touch on that, David McInerney being a big loss. But look, the league is wonderful, but at this time of year, getting back on it, losing players like him.
Yeah, they're not every player, isn't it, David McInerney? I'm sure, look, it's very, very early and I'm not sure what the extent of his hamstring injury is, but as you well know, sports people, as you get older, your kind of your ability to recover is probably compromised. And look, the championship comes so quickly in the sense when the championship is played off that if you are carrying a niggle, you're not going to have the time to get it right from game to game. And look, I suppose, look, there, who knows, 3 months is a long time away, and I'm sure he'll be in good nick as it comes to it. But as I said, for Brian, Clare are very funny, Ruby, in the sense that for ordinarily when a team wins in All-Ireland, you're kind of saying, will this team go on to win 2, 3 and maybe 4 All-Irelands? But I think maybe in the Clare team's case, that I suppose the age profile of the team that won the All-Ireland, you would be expecting a kind of a rather quicker than normal transition of players over the next year or two. And to be fair to Brian, he's used the league very well last year and it looks like he's going to do it again this year. So I think they're an interesting team to watch in the sense that I think you could see a higher than normal transition of players over the course of the championship. And so look, I think they're well equipped to deal with any injuries. And as I said, a couple of guys did show up very well there in their first league outings on Sunday.
Speaking of transitioning players, do you think Keith Rossiter would wish he could import a few to bolster his Wexford side?
Yeah, the Wexkins were under pressure, but look, again, they're just down an awful lot of players. So at this level, you can't afford to be down that many players. And like, I don't think Wexford had the depth of a panel that the Clares and Kilkennys and Limericks and Corks of this world would have. So when you're down that many, So you're always going to be on the back foot from the start. And to be fair, when Cork have you on the back foot, no better team to really stick a knife in you. And like 2:21 below Wexford Park is a big score. Again, the worrying thing for All and Sundry is that Cork are finding a couple of more players. Padraig Power, he's a player who had been very influential even in the club championship with his club and the Fitzgibbon. He kind of was his first day in the big game, and he popped 1-4. Brian Hayes was built on last year. And look, Pat Ryan is a very, very good panel picked and probably put together over the last couple of years. And I think really for any Cork people, nothing less than All Ireland would suffice even this year. And I think the expectation is that they are in a position to challenge this year. And look, they're off to a very, very good start. So it's the only dampener in the whole course of the game was two sending offs. Look, again, no one likes to see anyone getting sent off, and it's probably harmless enough in the bigger scheme of things. But look, as I said, Cork will be delighted, and Wexford is probably not getting any easier from next week. But Tipperary, I think they're on the way up to Tipperary, which again puts you on the back foot. So look, after round one, you would imagine that the nature of the losses of both Galway and Wexford, that, look, I suppose they're probably on the back foot from day one. But again, look, there's six games overall to be played here, so an awful lot of hurling to go yet.
Cork, of course, will be delighted, and the match is worth several training sessions. However, will they learned anything from a somewhat facile victory, considering the challenge that they're going to have under lights on Saturday night now?
So confidence is key. You're building on what you've done last year, and I suppose the question that will be put to Cork's detractors is, can they build on last year? Was it a flash in the pan? Were we just judging them on their wins over Limerick? So I suppose for a lot of Cork people, like silverware is a very, very important thing. And I don't think there's anybody in Cork would begrudge a league title here at this stage. And if you can do that by integrating 6 and 7 and 8 players in, which you did on Saturday, that gives you massive currency. And again, look, we need no look no further than what Clare did last year. They won a league with not exactly their first team, but it paid dividends as the year went on. They had the personnel in the background, and when it came to an All-Ireland final where they had to go to extra time, they had the subs bench that were tried and tested. And I think Cork will take away from that model as well. And look, really, really good players. I said really, really good, exciting forward line, and obviously the old guard will come back as the year wears on too.
Limerick, of course, had the bye week. I think they had a challenge match off Waterford, so they'll be primed and ready for that Saturday night clash in the Park next week. We'll be previewing all of those matches in due course. Just elsewhere, now before we wrap up our conversation, a perfect start for Niall O'Callaghan and the Dubs as well. There's going to be, I suppose, a good feeling around Dublin Hurling, of course, with Nafina now. And there's a man in charge who really knows Dublin Hurling inside out. So big things will perhaps be expected of them.
Well, it's been a very good couple of weeks in Croke Park for both Neil and Dublin. And I suppose, look, obviously the loss of Owen O'Donnell to the footballers, you know, I suppose they would have hoped to hold on to a player of that calibre. But even there now at the moment, Worden Street has his likes of Conor McHugh, is committing to hurling for a year or two. How it'll remain to be seen how he adapts it at this stage of his career. And even I know Brian Ryan from Limerick is transferring over to apply his trade there. So look, again, it's a positive start. Again, Antrim are very, very poor in the night as well, so I don't think you can read a whole pile from it. But again, going back to it, so the management appointment, I think nobody will love you like your own. And I think with likes of Neil, like, obviously he's going to put his whole heart and soul into it, and his knowledge will definitely be very, very important to Dublin. But I suppose the only thing I would say is that with the 7, so it's what we deem to be top teams operating in Division 1, I think, do you know what I mean, is the division, or the second tier of it, has it been watered down a little bit from what it previously would have been. And even for Dublin, I suppose, look, you've Antrim, you've Offaly, Carlow, Westmeath, Leash, outside of possibly Waterford, I think you are probably, with due respect to the others, you are playing teams that aren't at the same level. So, look, Dublin, they'll have to be very impressive in their games to get that run of momentum, because the Leinster Championship with Galway and Kilkenny will be a lot different to what their Division 1B league is.
This isn't necessarily completely related to hurling, Niall, but I know it was a double header in Croke Park at the weekend, but when you watch the turnout for the hurling match, Dublin Antrim, he's rattling around in a big empty Croke Park. Is that not an eerie place to play?
I take it any day of the week, Ruby, any day you walk into Croke Park to play. It's an amazing venue to play. Look, again, like with Croke Park, if you had only 50 or 60,000 people there, it actually has an eerie kind of a hottest of it at times. Sometimes it's not unless there's 70-plus thousand that you really get that atmosphere. But look, you have to go with the promotion of hurling. And look, for a lot of those Antrim players, okay, I know some of them might have played there in a Joe McDonough final or whatever, but like that exposure to the, you know, obviously venues like Croke Park, it is needed. Look, I'm not sure there was a whole pile of atmosphere in any of the grounds at the weekend, even with Clare and Kilkenny. The weather conditions itself, up until the last 10 minutes, people are frozen with cold. So, look, I too, like I said, as players, you want that exposure to playing in those stadiums. So if the longer they can keep on doing it, the better. Although, if they're playing Waterford, I'd imagine if, I'm not sure, is it a home or away, but if I was playing Waterford, if I was Dub, I'd definitely be taking them into Parnell.
Bring them up to Dunnycarney. That's exactly where we'd want them, Niall. Listen, we'll leave the conversation for there. Great chatting as always. Niall Moran.
Game on.
Football.
It is almost 7 o'clock, so very briefly on football, Mark Langan has joined us on the line. Mark, we're speculating here as to where Evan Ferguson might end up in the next couple of days. Have you any more news for us?
I can't. It's not exclusive, but I think it's clear he will be allowed to leave Brighton. Leverkusen seem to be pushing quite hard for Ferguson. We know that West Ham are also interested. Tottenham were sniffing around as well. But I think the problem with Spurs is that when Solanke gets fit again, maybe Ferguson feels like he wouldn't be playing there. If the opportunity arises for him to go to Leverkusen, I think it would be a great opportunity for him. We've seen other players from the Premier League go to Germany and kind of revive their career. Alonso plays attacking football. I think Leverkusen would create the chances for him to score goals. And if he were to stay in the Premier League and play at West Ham, you know, he'd also have a good manager in Potter and, just kind of build up his know-how and Premier League experience. So I feel like it's a bit of a no-lose situation for him, really, wherever he goes. But he just needs to be playing football. It's been a disappointing season for somebody that, you know, was being hyped up so much, a year ago, 18 months ago.
Mightn't be the only Irishman playing overseas. The Irish Independent reporting that Udinese are chasing Gavin Bazunu for a loan signing from Southampton. However, what we do know is that Celtic have been reunited with Jota, and Brendan Rodgers in the last 10 minutes or so has confirmed that Kieran Tierney will move to Celtic from Arsenal this summer at the latest. Good news for Celtic, Mark.
Yeah, I think so. Fans are really excited to have Jota back. Tierney suffered some terrible injuries at Arsenal, and it's been difficult for him to find a path through at the Emirates in recent seasons. But you don't have to go back that far to when he was playing very well in the Premier League. And I don't think anybody ever doubts Tierney's quality on that left-hand side. It's just whether he can stay fit. But it looks a really nice couple of signings, really, for Celtic, spending that Champions League money that they've got for reaching at least a playoff round already. Mm.
Well, certainly would. I read an interesting headline this afternoon. Marcus Rashford's ideal contract or dream contract is Barcelona. He obviously has a lot of dreaming, does he?
Yeah, I think Barcelona are interested as well. But the problem is Barcelona need to get somebody off their books to bring in Rashford. Even a suggestion that he will lower his wage demands that are pretty high at Manchester United. I'll be brutally honest and say I don't see where Rashford fits in at Barcelona. I mean, Lamine Yamal on one wing, Rafinha on the other. You got Lewandowski up front. I mean, I think he could find himself in exactly the same position he is at Manchester United, although maybe on the bench rather than completely frozen out. But I can understand why it's a dream move, but I don't think he's good enough to get in their starting 11.
On the topic of Manchester United, Roma have also inquired about Casemiro. However, Mark, we've just over 40 seconds left. Are we all agreed that Neymar will go down as the worst transfer in the history of modern football?
Well, 80-odd million euros, played 9 games, scored 2 goals. It sounds terrible, but Saudi Arabia have got a World Cup and they might consider that a value for money after all.
On that unfortunate note, that's a very, very valid point, I suppose. Mark Langdon, it's been brief. Thank you so much for taking the call. Paul Corry will join us to chat Champions League tomorrow. Nadine Doherty will be with us for ladies football. Damien Lawler on Gaelic Games News. And we'll have the latest from the Irish Six Nations camp, all in the company of Marie. Ruby, pleasure as always. Enjoy the...
Likewise, Shane. You back next Monday?
You're stuck with Marie.
Stuck with Marie next Monday. Monday even. Not so bad.
Yeah.
So she'll be fresh from Sunday Sports, so she'll know what happened.
Exactly, yeah. And you'll be able to review the Dublin Racing Festival. For now, big thanks to Ronan Lawler and Lorelei Davis from myself and Ruby and all the Game On team. Beto da Silva is up next with the new music show. So do stay tuned to 2FM. We're going to check in with the news desk.